Hey everyone, you're listening to episode 12 of Superhero Speak. It's a hostful episode. Well, this one was recorded the week before we all saw Man of Steel, so it might feel a little stale, but we held off on releasing it because we had a couple interviews we wanted to get out beforehand. In this episode, we talk about a lot of different things, but in particular, we end up talking about race and gender bending within movies and comics coming up. And it's an odd topic, but I think you should give it a listen. So, don't bend me. That's right. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
Ben.
John.
Why do you laugh when I announce my name?
It's not the name. It's how the
it's tone how you say it.
Used to convey it. Like, you're always annoyed to be here.
He's always annoyed to be anywhere, I think.
Or at least annoyed to have to speak.
So, Ben, you said you had a story for us this
week. I do. I have an anecdote to kick us off today. I was having a conversation with my daughter this weekend, or recently, and she pointed out with a small grin on her face, she's like, "Daddy, I know why Marvel is doing better than DC." And I'm like, "Okay, curious, why would that be?" And she said, "Because DC is just a nation, and Marvel is a universe."
Nice.
And that's, you know, it's interesting because they do brand themselves that way.
Yeah, they definitely market themselves that way. I've seen DC Universe reference places as well, but it definitely in the cartoon branding, it is DC Nation is how they've set themselves up.
Yes, and it's interesting. Are they not aiming as high, or they just went, well, Marvel's got Universe, so we'll say DC Nation?
I would say actually it was the other way around. I want to say DC was marketing themselves as DC Nation before Marvel started calling themselves Marvel Universe.
This is probably true. Maybe
some one-upmanship there.
True, but also one of the things with Marvel, early on when Stan Lee began writing Fantastic Four and whatnot, he wanted it to all be one cohesive universe. It's all together. You know, the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man live in the same New York City, the same universe.
Right.
So
not in these fictitious made-up cities that, you know, no one knows where they're supposed to be.
Well, Kansas is where,
That's where they've retconned it to be.
I mean, this is true.
Smallville was, I think, always in Kansas, but they never really
said where
Metropolis was.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's become in, you know, essentially some fictitious, you know, metropolitan area in Kansas in canon since then, but.
Well, it's somewhere in the DC Nation.
Yes.
On one of the many Earths.
Right.
All right. So movie news.
There's a number of things floating around.
Yeah, a number of articles floating around. The newest one, well, not the newest one, but one I heard about the other day, now they're talking about adding yet another villain to Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Here it goes.
Colm
Feore. I'm aware of him. And I like him in, he's in Revolution, and he's been in a number of things. He's often playing a bad guy, and he plays him well. But I do have my opinion on that. I read the article, and it does say that they've confirmed him. He's playing that role of Toomes, Adrian Toomes. But it doesn't necessarily say that they're going to put the Vulture in that movie. And I think that if they don't, which I hope they don't, because I don't think they're ready for a Sinister Six movie. But what does make sense is to start setting up that casting of introducing characters that they will use later.
Right. No, and I do hope that's the direction they're going in, because yes, Spider-Man 3 suffered from too many characters,
right.
Too many villains.
Right, something we've discussed.
Right, we've discussed this, and now we're saying, okay, well, we've got, we all know Electro is the main villain.
Yeah,
and then,
right. And we know that they're introducing Rhino in some capacity. It's not clear yet whether he's going to be in the Rhino suit
Right.
Any set imagery they've shown so far, it doesn't look anything like a rhino suit I've seen.
Right. And then we've got Harry and Norman Osborn being introduced.
Mm-hmm.
MJ being introduced.
Yeah.
And now Adrian Toomes, possibly the Vulture. So can we say too much to fit in a 2-hour movie?
It depends on how they fit it in. If Adrian Toomes is just sort of a nod, a random scientist at Oscorp, then I think that's acceptable. Similar to how they treated Doc Connors in the original Spider-Man trilogy. He was just, he was in all three. He was in the first, the second, and obviously a little more prominently in the third, investigating the ooze. But he was already there. They had him as a background character and available to bring forth as a main character if they needed to. Obviously they trumped that line and rebooted.
Right.
But it makes sense to introduce these characters earlier so that you have some background. So
right.
They're not just thrown in there.
Right. You're not surprised, oh, now all of a sudden here's a bad guy. We're going to do his intro story and make him a villain all within one movie and then kill him off at the end and still make it cohesive and fit. No, and that's true. And I think it's one of the things, I know Marvel's not in charge, Sony's in charge of these, but it's one of the things Marvel has been working more towards of being more cohesive, and hopefully that's where they're taking their nod from, is what they're doing over in the Marvel Universe.
I wouldn't even mind seeing some, maybe not casting, but at least nods to other characters' existence, like maybe a mention of Dr. Octavius or other characters.
Right.
That they may not actually have cast in the new Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Maybe Iron Man flying in the sky behind one of his...
Maybe.
That's a
tricky one, though. I mean, although they did talk about with Avengers and Amazing Spider-Man, there were supposed to be some crossovers and connections.
Right.
Even though they are different studios working on those. I believe that the Avengers was supposed to have the Oscorp building as in the cityscape for New York.
Right.
But it didn't fit, not because of any business reasons, but just because of technical timing reasons. They didn't have the model in time.
Right.
And to add in.
They can always have Hugh Jackman sitting at the bar. Oh, wait. we covered that one.
That would be done to death.
Yeah. And that's something I'd like to see. I mean, because you've got all of these different movies now, and Marvel's doing it right. They're not in absentia of the universe. They're, you hear references to other characters. You had the X-Men First Class where you walk in the bar, and there's Wolverine. And so you get mentions that there are other people that exist, but with the DC movies, historically just single universes. You think that if somebody was, talking to Bruce Wayne or talking to Batman, here's some mention of, oh yeah, that guy over in Metropolis, like they did with the Bruce Timm cartoons.
Right. And since you mentioned DC, that actually interests another topic that I thought was interesting. Read recently, obviously Man of Steel's coming out this weekend.
I have tickets. I'm going to see it.
I do as well.
I'm the only one that doesn't have tickets yet. Wow.
But they've already, Warner Brothers has already greenlit a sequel before it's even opened.
Yep.
And they've already got someone penning a script for a possible Justice League tie-in movie. But I did read somewhere this morning that, I would say it was Zack Snyder, the director for the current Man of Steel movie. Basically saying that when they do Justice League, it's not going to tie into the Batman Begins Dark Knight saga at all. So any Batman continuity is going to be a new continuity.
Did they know that for sure?
Because he seemed fairly confident the way he said it, that it was not going to nod to those. There is a nod to Batman's existence and whatnot in the Man of Steel, and that there's I believe that one of the Easter egg scenes is there's a satellite that Zod's ship knocks out of orbit that says Wayne Enterprises on it. So they are acknowledging that Batman exists, but it's not necessarily the Christian Bale.
So is that a way of Snyder saying, I don't want Christian Bale as Batman?
I don't think it is necessarily. I think they could even not nod to that canon and possibly cast Christian Bale in it, but that would be difficult. That would be tricky. I think what it might be saying is that they know that it'd be difficult to tie those together. I mean, if you look at that Dark Knight trilogy, it was very encapsulated. It had a beginning, middle, and end. You know, whether you liked those beginnings, middles, or ends. but the story had a complete arc. At the end, he was done. He was done being Batman. And I don't see how you pull him back into this world, you know, after having basically retired and being injured in numerous ways. Like, it just doesn't fit. You know, you almost have to go with a new story to fit into this world.
It only took them 2 years to reboot Spider-Man, so.
Sure, why not?
You know, you can't have Justice League without Batman. He's like,
no, absolutely. He's one of the linchpins. He's definitely, there's a lot of accessory characters you can sacrifice in a Justice League movie, but there are certain ones that are core to it. You have to have Superman, you have to have Batman, Wonder Woman, and I don't know, anyone else?
Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, I think he's one of the core four. But anyone else is sort of accessory. Yeah, Flash, okay.
But you have five. You have to have Flash because he's the comic relief.
Yeah. Well, also, I think Flash brings a unique power set to the movies that we haven't seen yet.
Because Superman can do whatever Flash can do, and he can do a lot of other things. So Flash is actually sort of a niche skill set.
I don't know.
Like, there's redundancy there.
I think Flash is faster than Superman.
They've raced before in the comics, and they've always tied.
This is true. Actually, to go back to your point about the Spider-Man reboot, though, I kind of feel that was done because Raimi and everyone walked away from him, and Sony wanted to jump on it as soon as possible before Marvel
would
sweep in and say, okay, we want it back.
Exactly. They had a window that if they didn't produce a movie within X number of years, then they lost rights to it.
Right, exactly. So to keep Marvel from having it, which actually...
That would have been a good thing, but yeah.
I think two weeks ago or last week, I actually heard in the news, Sony came out and said they can have the rights, Marvel can have the rights back to Spider-Man when they pry it from our cold, dead hands. So well, they're going to do everything.
They're smart, though. That's what better property is there in the Marvel universe than Spider-Man?
As long as they don't screw it up. I mean, look at Marvel's doing an awesome job.
They are actually. They're doing an amazing job with their universe building so far.
So, the other news around Marvel movies right now, everyone is aware about the Scarlet Witch Quicksilver in Avengers, but they're also going to be in Days of Future Past.
Right.
And right now,
they're cast differently.
They're being cast differently. They're going to be different actors in the two movies and be treated differently. Brings up a lot of interesting points.
It is an interesting thing, and I'm curious how the less nerdy comic fans feel about that sort of thing, if that'd be confusing for them. I personally don't see a huge deal with that, having them cast in two separate ways across these, because I see the business of it. But where I think the line is kind of weird with that is the rights issues around those characters. And we talked about this briefly the other day.
Right.
So the agreement between Marvel and Fox?
Yes.
And Fox that allows them to both use these characters at the same time is that these characters, like, basically, Fox can use these characters.
Right.
As mutants, as siblings, as children of Magneto, but cannot make any reference to the Avengers or any affiliation thereof.
Right.
Whereas, in the Marvel Universe, they can use these characters as siblings, as members of the Avengers, but can't make any nod to them being mutants or related to Magneto.
See, that's just...
And
right. How do you explain their powers without...
I mean,
that's my concern. I think Marvel is sort of over a barrel in that respect. You know, Fox can do all, you know, fit within those confines easily in the universe they've created.
Right.
Whereas in the Marvel universe that's built, sure, I could believe that these characters are, you know, exist as a brother and sister, but without explaining them as mutants, how do you explain the abilities they have? How do you justify that?
Bitten by a radioactive witch?
I guess,
seriously, it was a horrible wicked accident. I don't know.
I mean, I guess they're going to have to nod to them being metahumans in some capacity, but avoid the word mutants. They come up with some other explanation that these types of people exist, but just don't refer to them as mutants.
I just find it a very fascinating way to divvy up your rights or say, okay, Fox, you can do these X-Men movies, and you own the rights to the word mutant for the movies. Like, that just... A mutant is just a word.
It doesn't sound like higher-ups in Marvel were either thinking or were involved in those negotiations.
Well, this is before they started making their own movies.
Absolutely.
When they sold the rights.
Back when those rights deals were set up, Marvel didn't even have a studio.
Was that before the Marvel stuff was taken back over by, at what point Stan Lee had lost control over it, and he came back and started, like, kicking ass and... from what I remember reading, it was after, like, the first Hulk movie, Stan Lee got fed up with it, walked back in and said, no, and started...
I don't know how much he's controlling what's going on, but basically there definitely was a change in philosophy at Marvel that they seeing all these things play out. Like, we need to start taking control of these properties and doing them right. And although I thought Incredible Hulk wasn't that the first Marvel Studios production? I know Iron Man was one of the first. But I wasn't sure if, and I know that the first Hulk movie was not through Marvel.
Right.
The second one, I think, was.
I think the second one, the Incredible Hulk one, was through Marvel. I think that was actually the first Marvel-produced movie.
Yeah.
And that was, because that was the point they said, all right, let's do this ourselves and let's do it right and build a world and a universe that fits together.
And actually, what you might be thinking of was the whole fight over the Spider-Man rights. Stanley was involved with that. I don't know if anyone, and at this point, knows or remembers. It was actually in the 80s is when they began talking about making a Spider-Man movie. And I don't remember what studio originally had the rights, but they basically bought them and then decided they were going to sit on them and not make the movie. They were just holding on to them and then shopping the rights out to other studios and whatnot. And sat on them for a long time, and finally Stan Lee got fed up with that, and that's when he started fighting for the rights back to get them back to Marvel. And it was a big long story. It's all history now. You can look this all up online.
Well, it got them off their asses, and they actually ended up despite the way that the original Spider-Man trilogy ended up,
mm-hmm.
I think it was the success of that first Spider-Man movie that really put superhero movies back on the map. And even though Marvel is doing a lot of the best stuff right now, they weren't necessarily the pioneers, you know.
Right.
Well, they didn't have the resources.
No, they didn't.
So now they'll just drive trucks of money up to them and say, here, make another movie, please.
Well, they started garnering resources, and then Disney bought them.
Right.
Yeah.
And Disney is basically a pile of resources.
Which, so far, and that was one thing that I got worried about, you know.
Yeah, I had some initial concerns there, but you look at the, and actually this conversation came up with people when they bought the rights to Star Wars. A lot of people were concerned of what they were going to do with it. But you look at the things that they've done, they bought Marvel, in the crescendo as they're coming up, and obviously they have not faltered from that. They bought Pixar as they were coming up and doing well.
Pixar
is still plowing forward and making great movies. So the evidence points to Disney being smart about how they're managing these properties that they're acquiring. And I found it very enjoyable and exciting in how they're managing them.
And as long as they leave them alone and let them have creative control.
Right.
Which, you're right, they have done, Pixar is a perfect example.
Yes.
That could have gone down really quick. And the movies they've been putting out lately are still awesome.
Right. And another thing is given is it's cemented a home for these properties. Like, for instance, the Marvel Universe cartoons that exist are all running on Disney XD, and they have that as a home to run those shows. And the new Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show has been picked up and going to run on ABC, which is also a Disney property. Right. And, you know, they have these places. And, of course, you know, financials are still going to come into play in these things and how these things perform. But they at least have these solid partnerships. They don't have to shop around to find places to run these things.
And they can survive a flop.
Yeah.
Which they couldn't have by themselves.
Right.
Yeah, I know some artists and whatnot that work with Marvel, and I've asked a couple of them, you know, is it any different since Disney took over? And most of them are like, no, pretty much business as usual. The only thing I've ever heard is that some of the editors are a little more cautious now, is really the only word they use. Kind of like, they're more, because I think what it comes down to is, you know, they were top dogs, you know, just above the editors, the editor-in-chief, and then the CEO. But now it's like there's a whole board
hierarchy above them.
Above them, so they'll, you know, if a book starts not selling well, there's people farther up the food chain than me that can say, hey, I don't like that, you know, put another editor on this book.
So right. they might take less risks.
Right, and that's, you know, but as far as I know, like, they haven't been, like, censoring anything. They haven't been saying you can't do that because, you know, Disney wouldn't allow that.
Well,
so,
obviously nobody's been bitten by a radioactive mouse yet. So.
Give it as far as we know. I think that's the plot for the next Avengers movie.
Yeah. Well, no, that would explain the Scarlet Witch. Perhaps.
Yes, because Mickey is magic.
Yes.
That she gets infused with the Disney magic.
I think that's a good point for us to move on.
Oh, is it? Okay, good. And then the final piece of movie news. Found this interesting, and there's a lot of different ways we can look at this, but for those who don't know, Fox is now talking about rebooting the Fantastic Four franchise, because we're reboot happy in this world.
Of course.
And it's all, everything about this right now, everything I could find online, it's all rumor, so take this with a grain of salt. But the actor that has been attached to play Johnny Storm is Michael B. Jordan. I don't know a lot about this actor. I haven't seen him in anything before, but the main thing to know about him is that he's African-American.
And they lost him. What, were they special fraternal twins? Or?
No. So, right. So, this brings up a lot of interesting points. And, okay, it's a stupid move. Right? I understand Fox's point is they want to bring more diversity in.
It's a ploy.
In.
Exactly. It's a ploy to try to make the character more attractive to a broader audience or to a different audience that they feel isn't necessarily engaged in these movies.
But I believe that's wrong. Because African Americans are going to these movies. They are enjoying what these studios are doing.
Absolutely.
And yes, of course, you want to appeal to more African Americans. But again, there are plenty of characters out there.
There's plenty of characters that already exist that they can bring to the big screen.
Right.
That are already established as African American. And they could also create new characters. I mean, that's also something we've talked about in the past with our interviews and things. That, you know, we don't need hand-me-down characters. Let's create some new interesting characters.
Right.
And, yeah, well, they both have at least small stables of both DC and Marvel. I think DC might Absolutely. Have the more interesting stable because a lot of the black characters in Marvel were brought out in the 60s or something, and they were making their first push to apply.
I think there's an argument made that some of the characters from Marvel were stereotypical at the time.
Yeah.
You know, Tony Isabella even brought up, you know, Luke Cage he's a former criminal. In the books, you know, especially in the 60s and 70s when they brought them around. So, right, I can see that. But you don't even need to focus on that aspect in a movie if you want to bring Luke Cage to a movie.
No, you could retcon how that came up to be. And
right.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
Also, you know, another thing is, yeah, okay, we know Marvel and DC's African-American characters, but there are plenty of other publishers out there and plenty of independent books with African-American characters that these movie studios can look at. I mean, why not, you know? And I would say, if you're involved in the movie business and you're listening to this podcast right now, go to ecbacc.com, ecbacc.org, I'm sorry, not .com, .org. Check out their website. You can search for ECBACC on the internet. And there, you know, you'll find links to writers and comic books on there that are, it's a treasure trove of African-American characters. Go to ECBACC 2014, meet some of these writers, and, you know, most of them would be, you know, would love to do a movie deal with you, you know? Let's stop, you know, it was explained before to me by a friend of the show, Eric, that, you know, they're hand-me-down powers.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to say, oh, you want to be represented? You can be Johnny Storm. Like, no. Like,
right.
Go out and find real characters to represent. Hey, let's do a Nightseeker movie, people. I mean, come on. There's plenty out there. Just look for it. Don't try to just rehash what you have and not be creative about it.
Right.
Personally, I'd love to see a Static Shock movie.
There you go.
I mean, and the character, I don't know comic book side of it, because, you know, the only one I've seen is the Bruce Timm.
Sure.
But that was a really interesting and great character.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would be an awesome movie.
Right.
So.
No, it would. It would definitely
right.
be.
And also, like, Young Justice highlighted slew of characters
that
were very interestingly presented. They even brought back characters that you wouldn't think could be translated in a way that was not hokey, but like they had a representation of Apache Chief in Young Justice that didn't seem like, you know, let's throw in a Native American in there somehow.
Yeah. Right.
And they also had other demographics, like, was it Blue Beetle?
Blue Beetle was, they had the version of him they had was Jaime Reyes, so he was a Hispanic, but they had Bumblebee and Fox and a variety of other black characters in there, and a variety of different, you know, races, and obviously plenty of female characters that were all strong and well represented.
Right.
And that's another thing, right, number one, we all know that this is just a dirty marketing trick, change the race. But the other aspect of it, too, is that Johnny and Sue Storm are brother and sister, so...
Yeah, how do you race-bend both of them, or do you somehow explain them as, like, adoptive twins? Like, how is that
going
to
work? Exactly. Like, you're going to change continuity, and again, if you're someone from Fox and you're listening to this right now, one way to tick off a comic book fan change continuity for a publicity stunt.
Yeah.
And I guarantee that if you do it specifically for that reason and you don't have a good way to change it, no one's going to go see your movie.
Although, now that you mention it, I could picture, what's her name, Zoe Saldana, the woman who played Uhura in the recent Star Trek movies.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I could picture her as an invisible woman. Strong, powerful, black invisible woman.
Yes.
Just saying.
All right, fine.
I'm not saying I condone it. I'm just saying if they were to do it.
Or do you want to see her with an invisible uniform? Anyway.
That's a different movie.
Yeah. One thing I do want to mention, though, if they really go through with the Fantastic Four reboot, they better make Sue Storm one of the most powerful characters in the Marvel Universe.
Right.
I mean, and they treated that, treated her like that in some of the Marvel Universe cartoons where, in the Avengers cartoon, they had when they were getting invaded by the Skrulls.
Mm-hmm.
Right, well, so the first thing they did, took out,
yeah,
because they knew that she was a,
and they kept her unconscious.
Yeah,
they didn't just like hold her up somewhere. They kept her completely disabled.
Right, they knew that the key people they had to take out to be successful.
Yeah.
Though I believe the two most powerful characters, at least the two most powerful mutants, are Magneto and Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
Scarlet Witch, just because she can do just about anything.
She can basically change reality.
which is hopefully they don't go that far. Yeah. In
yes, with her Deus Ex Machina power. Yeah.
Yes.
We need the building to go down. She'll do it.
So yes, like let's just say no dirty tricks. Let's try to find good African American, Asian, Hispanic characters to represent that already exist. And again, if you can't find them, right, create new. I'm sure there's writers out there that'd be willing to create these characters.
Sure. And if they are going to reboot Fantastic Four, do it right.
Yeah.
Please. And Dr. Doom does have magical powers.
Right.
Alright, so, speaking of race bending and gender bending, but this really isn't gender bending, onto comic book news. Anyone, because we can talk about it or we can wait. I think we should talk about it because we're only half hour in.
But we'll say that, we'll preface it by the fact that none of us have read this book.
Yes, none of us have read this yet. However, X-Men Volume 4, number 1, hit the stands, I believe, last week, and it's an all-female cast.
Right.
So, which is interesting.
The lineup. Yeah, I know it's all...
I don't know why they didn't call it X-Women. I don't know why they you know, well, that would have been...
They're using men in the gender-neutral aspect.
Right.
Yeah, I know it's Storm, Rogue, Jubilee, and... The rest I don't recall who the other characters were.
Maybe I'm giving you Jubilee, because there was another crap article I read that was talking about Jubilee as one of the worst power characters.
She was, at least how she was initially depicted. I think she's sort of, her powers have grown to be a little bit more useful in more modern incarnations.
So what do you guys think? Do you think this is, you know, this is a brilliant writing idea, or is this just a trick to attract women into reading comics?
I think it's a fair tactic. I don't, because as it is, there have always been, it is one of the comics where women have been well established as on equal footing as men in X-Men. X-Men has always had, female characters that have been strong and could stand on their own and side by side with their male counterparts. And I read an article about this, and the editor in charge is a woman, who sort of pushed this, like, what if we do this? And the editors were like, go for it. Why not? Because as it was, I think prior to this issue, in the last volume, the X-Men were mostly women anyway. The only male in the team was Colossus. I'm not sure what happened to Colossus and why he's not in the team right now, but, so there was already that near that status as it was.
I haven't read the X-Men titles in a while. Maybe they killed him again.
Maybe. So I don't see a problem with it personally.
I'm with Elastigirl. Leave it to the men? I don't think so. But yeah, no, it could be a marketing ploy. You know, if they come out with another swimsuit issue, we'll know.
Yeah, I don't think it's a marketing ploy because they're not. I've seen the cover art for it. They're not depicting them as a bunch of pinup girls on the cover. They're depicting them as a strong set of women ready for action.
Yeah, and that's actually I have the picture right here, and I'll post a link to it on our blog. I mean, it's even to the point where they're all fully covered, like not even
right,
a little bit of like. Other than Storm's
wearing
outfit.
Fairly normal-ish, reasonable clothing. They're not wearing the spandex.
Right, exactly. They're not even
revealing
stuff.
No keyholes, no...
Exactly. Like it's, it's good. It's definitely going to depict female superheroes in a better light than some of the candy shots that you see all the time drawn by artists.
No Power Girl.
Well, that's decent.
Well, I know, but...
But yeah, no equivalent to that. Yeah.
Right, and it could be a good thing. It would be an interesting take.
The writing, though.
How well is the writing going to be?
Stories are well laid out.
It'd be an interesting take, and I will be picking up the issue and I'll read it. Hopefully, you guys will either buy it or borrow it from me.
I would like
with the subscription, you said, right?
One of the
can you get that through the subscription?
I don't think so. And we can talk about the subscription thing. That was one of the things I mentioned as a topic to discuss in the spotlight.
Oh, okay. We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But along the lines of, you mentioned gender bending, I did want to mention one small note on the TV landscape.
Okay.
There's this new cartoon that's come out that's caused some stir of controversy, especially amongst conservatives. And my kids, have instantly jumped on this and actually really enjoy this cartoon. So there's this new cartoon. It's not DC or Marvel, but it's on the Hub. And it's called She's Out. And
She's
Out.
She's Out. Okay.
So the concept of it is that there's this, apparently there was this female superhero named She's Out, where her powers were activated via a ring. But the person who carried this ring had died, and, you know, her niece and nephew are cleaning, you know, going through her stuff, and the nephew puts on the ring and becomes She's Out. So he
becomes,
but he doesn't become a she, he just becomes cross-dressed and has all of the powers and weaknesses that this character has. The character itself is follows a number of stereotypes, like the costume's all like pink and like high-heeled boots, and like that, you know, has this like lipstick laser, it's basically like a lightsaber in a lipstick thing.
That is cannon fodder for conservatives.
Well, conservatives are jumping on it because they think this gender bending thing is a horrible thing for kids to see. I personally don't find that much part of it all that. But I think the more, and also the progressive people are liberals are jumping on it because of that. It's the stereotypes are too harsh. That it's,
yes,
that's following a lot of the, you know, the, like, her weakness is messy hair.
What?
If her hair gets messed up, her powers fail.
This is the reason why it's in the Hub, right?
Right. So that's, you know, on one hand, conservatives hate it because it's, you know, horrible, you know, scandalous imagery for children and sent the wrong messages. And liberals are all up in arms about it because it also because it sends the wrong messages, but in a completely different way.
There was a manga I heard a while back that had a character like that was like man and woman. I'm wondering if that's, I'll have to go back to my notes.
Well, I ended up having a discussion about this with my wife because before I'd even seen any of it. And I said, well, what's, you know, is it really that scandalous to have someone, like, if they literally changed gender?
Right.
And I posed the idea, like, what, think about, you know, for instance, Shazam. You know, Shazam is a mantle that's been passed down.
Yes.
And Billy Batson, who is a young, you know, teenage boy, you know, transforms into Shazam. And granted, they've also created other, like, Miss Marvel or, you know, these other versions, you know, that are, like, part of that.
At one point, it's like family was.
Yeah, right. But what if a girl had taken that mantle, you know, the Shazam mantle, and so when she transformed, it was, you know, a young teenage girl transforming into this big, muscular man.
Right.
And of course, my wife's response to that was like, well, that would be wrong because, you know, that's suggesting that for this girl to have strength, she has to become a man. You know, I said, well, what if it was the other way around? It's like, oh, well, that's just dumb. The conversation didn't go far from that. But I think it's an interesting idea that potential for exploring. And I wonder if there's any characters that fit that.
The Wonder Twins. Model. You could have them when they change.
They change into completely different things.
Well, but yeah, but like, you know, you could have their alter egos be switched when they become.
Right.
You know,
that'd be weird.
Yes. She's Out. So I think I'm going to definitely have to check this out.
Yeah, you might have to check it out.
I think it's interesting because it sounds to me like it's basically saying a screw you to gender roles.
Yeah.
You know, and.
Yeah, I think it's novel. I think it's an interesting approach. I think that some of the arguments that, from the feminist side of things, are just a factor that they're trying to make this simple and accessible to children.
Don't get me started on feminists.
Says the all-male panel.
You, they belong in the kitchen, cooking me dinner.
I disavow anything coming out of his mouth right now.
I don't even know him now.
Jeez.
I wonder how I got in this room with a chauvinist and a racist.
Well, could be worse. Could be Hans Zimmer. Anyway.
Oh, God.
Don't pull the pin. All right. I'm putting it back in.
Damn it.
Benjamin.
Nice try.
You said that you had a subscription thing you want to talk about?
So, yes. I just wanted to... So, we talk a lot about Marvel and DC. Marvel now has... Or they've had the Marvel Unlimited subscription thing that they've set up.
Okay.
So, where now you can... pay a flat fee to access a large array of their catalog of works. And you're not paying per issue, you're paying, it's digital access. So you have access to this, swath of their catalog. It's not all current. It's a lot like the Netflix model in that it's, older issues of things, a year old or so. But you pay like $10 a month, I think, or maybe it's $5 a month.
It's $10 a month or
$69 up front.
$69 for a year.
Right. And I actually signed up. I subscribed to it recently and have started delving into some of the older catalog stuff to read some things that I had missed. So I think it's a really nice setup. I waited until they had the Android app because I have an Android phone. So I'd say it's a really clever idea. I'd like to see more stuff added into it, as far as the issues of things. The one thing that I do have a couple negative notes on it, though.
Okay.
One is that it seems that there's some divisiveness that they're employing there. So, for instance, one of the series I started reading was I started looking at some of the Ultimate Comics series that are available.
Okay.
And I started reading through the Ultimate Comics Ultimate series. And I got through to, I want to say, like, issue number 13. And then went to go find issue 14, and it wasn't in their catalog. But they have 15 and 16 and everything.
So
after
it's exactly
that.
Like the Netflix.
Exactly. So there was a missing issue there. And I sort of started tooling around and looking at some of the other series, and it seems like a lot of those series, they're specifically leaving out one issue in any given series. And I don't know specifically if this is divisive or on purpose or just some factor of how they're getting these things posted online and just have missed these issues for some reason.
They sold the rights to be able to mention mutants for those issues.
No, my guess, though, is that they're specifically possibly leaving those on purpose to drive people to have to go and pay for those issues.
So what
individually?
I'm sorry. Which book was that again?
Ultimate Comics, Ultimates, issue 14.
I'm gonna look that up.
So that's my one beef with it. The other thing I've run into is the Android application at least. Online is great. I haven't used the iPhone version of the app because I don't have one, but the Android app. One thing I've run into with that, they have three different ways that you can read it. There's a single page, double page, and the smart page model of going through the panels. And the smart page is really nice because it sort of jumps to keyframes through it. They've really made an effort to single out these keyframes so you can follow through the story in a way that makes sense. But I have occasionally noticed that sometimes text bubbles get cut off in a way that you can't read all of them. So there are some minor issues there. And additionally, the app, when you rotate between landscape and portrait view, it doesn't always rescale well. And in the one and two page models, you can't zoom in at all.
Yeah. No, it's funny that you mentioned that because that's one of the things Kevin Smith always talks about with the digital is that he... Sometimes with comics, when the artist lays out the panels, you don't know what direction you're supposed to read it in.
Yeah, it's not always clear.
So at least with the digital,
they're making an effort to guide you through it, which is nice.
Right.
But then I remember seeing some, like, full page things where you could follow it around, but there's like a central care. I mean, the artist takes great liberties in how some of those pages get laid out, so it's kind of really...
Absolutely.
You have to see the whole page done to get it.
Yeah, in some cases you need to see. And with the smart frames, they often do that, where they'll show you the whole page first, and then step you through it. So you get that full visual,
yes.
And then step you through the frames. But I know I've, in cases before, this is where I've been reading digital comics, where I've looked at where it's been like a two-page spread, and for whatever reason, the artist did it such that it actually went across in rows across both pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone and read across the rows on one page and then started reading the rows on the second page. I'm like, wait, this is not jointed, right?
Yeah.
There's, you know, I'm missing things and this is out of order, and now I have to read it again to figure it out.
Yes, it is annoying when you have to go back and reread in a comic book.
Yes. When it's not,
yes. Listen to us, comic book artists.
But so that's just my feedback on it. I like it. I like the model. I think it's an interesting, it's a good approach for those of us who aren't likely to go out and purchase every single issue, but still want to access some of these titles and, mm-hmm. and things and follow these stories. And they do also have things grouped by stories. Like, so you can go and read through, House of M or Civil War it'll give you the list of all of the comics involved and let you go through those, mm-hmm. which I think is great.
I'm going to have to check this out.
Yeah. But I think, A, there's some work they need to do on the app to make it a little bit better. And B, I'm not a fan of the divisive omission of certain issues.
Yeah, I wonder, it could also be just a, maybe not a marketing thing, but a contractual thing. Maybe.
It could be. Because I did notice that when I was looking across other titles, all of those issues that were missing happened to be from the same month.
Okay. Yeah.
So, like, looking across different Ultimate titles and different other titles, it was all, like, I want to say July 2012 was missing consistently across a bunch of
It's interesting,
titles.
Because there's also Comixology. It's another distributor.
Comixology. Well.
And I'm wondering if they have deals with them to say, you know, we're still selling this issue for $4, so don't offer it in your unlimited until... We bring the price down.
That's fair. It could be that. But additionally, you know, Marvel also has a Marvel app as well where you can buy individual
yes.
issues. I think a potential that they need to look into is combining these in the app, like having one app that does both. Because one of the problems right now is with those missing issues, you don't have the option inside the Marvel Unlimited app to go ahead and purchase that issue. You have to go find it in the other application and buy it individually.
Software designers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Especially those guys that design front end stuff.
Hey.
Yeah. Oh, wait, huh?
Yeah, we suck.
Oh, sorry, that's an inside joke that no one's going to get who's listening.
No.
I think I'll definitely check that out. What about you? You going to go check it out?
Oh, yeah. All
right.
No, I mean, the expense of getting into comics.
I think that's a good option for people who don't want to go out and spend $4 an issue on multiple comics and find back issues, you mm-hmm. know, to get caught up on Civil War or something like that.
Yeah.
It seems like a very good alternative.
Yeah.
And speaking of software and Marvel, have either of you tried the Marvel Heroes game yet?
I have not.
No.
Is that a PC game?
It is a PC game. For those who have not tried it, it's a free game, MarvelHeroes.com. It's free to download, free to play.
Oh.
I may have to check that out. I did hear about that recently, and I know that one of the online webcomics I read made a joke about it last week.
Now, it's interesting because the interface is very Diablo-like. Where, you know, it's all point and click,
mm-hmm.
Side, or three quarters, view.
Three quarter view, zoomed out.
Zoomed out, yes. And you can only pick from, I believe, six characters to begin with, and they all have different power types.
Right.
You know, I believe, you know, I had picked Hawkeye. So that's the arrow, the distance shooter. I believe Thing is a character you can choose, so he's going to be the
tank.
He's your tank. Yeah. Right. So on and so forth. I don't remember all the characters off the top
Daredevil,
of my head.
Daredevil, I assume, is in that set. I say that just because...
Yes, I believe Daredevil was in the set.
Penny Arcade. I think it was that Lampoon that had like Thing and Daredevil walking up to do some mission, and there's already another Thing and Daredevil standing there.
Right.
And
now,
like, yeah, you just missed it. There was like 9 Things and 7 Daredevils.
Now, of course,
I'm getting flashbacks to City of Heroes.
Now, of course, the downside is if you want to be Iron Man or Spider-Man, you can buy those characters separately. Yes.
Ah.
Yeah, so that's, you know. But I downloaded it. I tried it. I'll probably play it again with my son. It's a good little distraction. They did a decent job on it. I think that people should check it out.
Yeah.
You know, I won't say it's the best Marvel game ever made. Again, it in ways feels like a Diablo copy with just Marvel graphics. So don't take it too seriously. I don't think people really need to dive in and spend money on it. But if you want to...
It sounds like fun. I'm going to give it a try.
Right.
So, along the lines of games, you know, we haven't really talked about games much on here, but I do have a Marvel game that came out last year. And it's an Xbox game. The Avengers Battle for Earth.
Yes.
And that is a lot of fun. It's a Kinect game. So if you have Xbox and Kinect, it's definitely one that's worth checking out. My kids love it. And it's there's not a lot of story to it. I think the basic story behind it is like a scroll invasion type story.
Yeah.
But really, it's a battle game. It's a sort of, you know, Street Fighter-esque or like Mortal Kombat-esque type of, you know, one-on-one or actually two-on-two fighting game where, you know, you're in an arena and you're fighting until someone's knocked out. But it's just a lot of fun because they put a lot of time and effort into coming up with these gestures that result in iconic movements that these characters make. You know, for like doing Hulk smashes and you know, Thor throwing his hammer, you know, certain arm gestures that you do to make these things happen. And I think it was pretty cleverly put together.
That's interesting. I actually don't play Kinect a lot just because I watch my son. I watch my son play it, and it's like, wow, that's so tiring. Like, he plays the...
Oh, yeah, my kids will be sweating.
He'll play the... He has the Power Rangers and the Dragon Ball Z game. And, right, and they're very good at, like, you do the gesture that Goku does in the cartoon to shoot the
come at me.
Yeah, there you go. And all those things. And it's and if you don't do it right, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work,
yeah. Yeah. Which is cool. There is a version of that for the Wii U. I don't actually have... that one.
Yeah.
But I might check it out on the Wii U just because, again, I'm fat. I don't like jumping around.
No, yeah. And I definitely, when I play it with my kids, I definitely feel, you know, I can only go a couple rounds like, you know what, you guys play for a while. I'm good.
But my son did talk me into buying, what's the DC one?
Yeah, there's a DC version of that.
Hold on. Now, jeez, I'm drawing a blank. Talk amongst yourselves. So,
DC versus Mortal Kombat?
No, it's not. It's just DC.
Yeah. But the thing with the Avengers Marvel game, yeah, it's funny to see my kids play. Because my kids are 6 and 9. You know, my son is 6, my daughter's 9. My daughter will study, you know, look at, because they give you cues on the screen of the moves to make. And a lot of them are two-part moves, and she will look at them and she will replicate the gestures. My son will just jump wildly and accidentally make the moves most of the time. And yet, he beats her half the time, at least more than half the time, just in the random, because he's just more hyperkinetic and gets more moves out than she does.
It's Injustice. God's
Oh, right, yes, Injustice. Yeah, I've seen a lot of... And the graphics on that look amazing.
Now... I will say that, yes, the graphics are amazing. It's a fighting game, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up with Street Fighter, you know, and Mortal Kombat, and I played them. And I'm fightered out.
Yeah, and honestly, I was never big on those. I was definitely, you know, the rare few times I would play things like Mortal Kombat, I was a button masher. I just would just hit the crap out of buttons until it did something and I won. And usually have sore thumbs afterward.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things that bugged me is that I believe it's the Mortal Kombat engine. It's the same company that's currently making the Mortal Kombat games. And it's a side fighting game. It's not one of those ones where you can now move in like more than two dimensions. And to me, that's like, really? like I've played fighting games where I can move, you know, in all different directions. Why now am I now stuck in on a side scroller?
Right.
The one thing they added that's kind of cool is on a lot of the boards, if you're on the end of the board, you do I think back and the X button on the on the PlayStation anyway, and the one character will hit the other character and blow them through, and they'll end up in another screen, you know, in another part of the back cave or the Hall of Justice or wherever they're, whatever the setting is. And it's funny because when the other character is flying through, they hit things and they take damage. You know, there's kind of one that's cool that's in the back cave. When you knock the person into the elevator, and at first the elevator's going up and you just see like bulges come out of the side of the elevator. Then they go inside and you see them fighting, but it's like, it would have been funny if they just showed the outside. That would have been funnier to me. And of course, you know, it has, it's, you know, people were like, oh, this is so great. You know, you could finally settle the argument. Who would win, Batman or Superman, blah, blah, blah. But my issue with it is that it's not realistic in the fact that it's a fighter, so that everyone has to be evened out to a point.
There's an equalization that always comes with that sort of
thing. Otherwise, Superman would just wipe the walls with everybody.
Right, exactly.
You basically, you know, in two punches, crush everyone to a bloody pulp.
Right, you have Superman and Doomsday, so that, you know, you could...
Crying out loud.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, so... They could do it where, okay, if you pick Superman, you have to pick Doomsday or some of the other, one of the other super strong characters to go against them, but nah, it doesn't work that way. And it's
there's an equalization that happens there.
Yeah, and that's that always bugs me because, like, my son likes, what's his face? The guy with the two colored mask.
Deadshot. What's his name?
Deathstroke.
He likes to play as Deathstroke, and I'll pick Superman, and it's like, you know, one hit from Superman on Deathstroke should just knock him out.
It's the old, you know, nuke it from space. I mean, you know, Superman can stand on the moon and hit him with his heat vision.
And that's another thing. Instead of fatalities or that kind of, like in a special ending move, they have special moves within the game, and, you know, you get hit so many times, your power meter goes up, and once it gets the full, you can do the move. And they're over the top.
Game has that concept as well.
Okay, and they're over the top moves. Mm-hmm. Superman does hit the person, and they fly into outer space, and then he flies up and then knocks them back down to Earth. And it's like, okay.
Because Deathstroke would really survive that.
Of course. And Batman's is cool, because he, like, hits the person with, like, an explosive thing, knocks them down, and then pulls out a remote, pushes buttons on it, and the Batmobile comes by and runs the person over. So it's fun. I mean, it's fun in that way.
It'd be more awesome if you press the button and one of his satellites opened up to reveal an ion cannon. From space.
But yeah, the Marvel game does that sort of thing as well with you have the ultra moves that you can
do. Okay.
But what's clever with it is, like, you do have this power-up thing that builds up, and when you hit that mark, you can use that. But what's key to that is once you activate that, there is each character has sort of a passphrase, like some sort of phrase that so again, taking advantage of the Kinect, you have to say that and have it pick up on it so that it'll still do damage either way, but it'll do even more damage and be a more interesting version of the cinematic, you know, beatdown. If you say the phrase the right way.
Is it Kaioken? Is that what you have to say?
No. Well, it depends on the character. Like, each character has their own phrase. And it shows it up on the screen to prompt you.
So is
you
it,
have to say it.
If your thing is a clobber in time?
I haven't played his thing, so I'm not sure. But it probably is.
I'd hope so.
I mean, I imagine Hulk is like Hulk Smash. I forget.
Ah. Because you don't play it too much either, do you?
I play it.
You're in the same boat.
I got it for Christmas along with the Xbox, you know, last Christmas, and it got played, a lot for a couple of days, and then I sort of dropped it off. I could still occasionally play it, but I haven't played it in ages.
All right. Well, we're at about an hour, guys. Well, I don't think we have any more topics to talk about this week, unless we could take 5 minutes and do a rant. It's up to John.
Well, I think we should save it for later because this Saturday I'm going to see Man of Steel and they have a lot of rant power just saved up. So, I'm going to the 9 o'clock showing, 3D, taking my daughter. I'll probably be there at like 7:30.
Okay. Where are you going?
Regal Cinemas in Downing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm doing a 9 a.m. showing at the movie tavern. So we're doing a little bit of breakfast.
Nice. Yeah, I think there's a Cracker Barrel next to us, so we'll probably have breakfast and then go and stand in line.
I will try to see it Saturday morning. And then Monday we can compare notes. And I'm sure that everyone listening knows that we'll do a review of the movie.
And especially the soundtrack.
Which will be awesome.
It'll be the best soundtrack ever.
Except for everything that came before.
Alright, so, anyway. This is Dave for Superhero Speaks signing off. And as always, everyone, don't let your cape caught in the door. Bye. Hey everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So, check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak, which you can reach at ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John, and you can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com, and if you want, there's our Twitter account, @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.